All right, Ecclesiastes chapter 12. We are in our book, almost done with our book, in our home, the crusade of the Christian home, and we're talking about our heavenly home. And I think this will be something that you can get a hold of if you'll listen to what we have to say today. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 1. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them, while the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain. In the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease, because they are few, and those that look out of the windows be darkened, and the doors shall be shut in the streets, when the sound of the grinding is low, and he shall rise up at the voice of the bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low, also when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fear shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets, or ever the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. Then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. If you read that quickly and you're not concentrating, you might just read it like, what in the world is that all about? Well, let's talk about it and see what it's saying here. And we have some clues that might help us and realize what this is saying. But first of all, we come to the last book of Ecclesiastes, and it's referring to the day of our departure. And the day of our departure is the day when we leave this world. If we know the Bible and we know the Lord, then we understand that if Christ does not come soon, we're going to pass through the door of death into heaven. Instead of just being raptured with the living, we will be caught up as saints who have passed on, and the dead in Christ will rise. And so Hebrews 9:27 says, "Is appointed a man once to die." And so death is something that we physically have waiting for us. If you're saved, you're not going to go to hell. But death is something that we all know is an appointment that we can't escape. And the way of escape, of course, is through Christ. John 14:6, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me." The second death is hell. The Bible says that the second death is the lake of fire. And we don't want anyone to go there. That's not what God would have. He would want all to be saved, but physically speaking, we have an appointment with death. All of us have that. We don't know exactly what day it is, but it is coming. And all of us want to live as long as we can possibly, as long as we possibly can, and people are living longer these days. There are more people living older than in past times, but no matter how long we may live, we will come to the one day that will be our last. And our bodies will return to the earth, and we will go to meet our God. Notice verse 7. Then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. Does that remind you of anything? The dust will return to the earth as it was. Can you think of, go back to Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, where the Bible says that Adam was formed of the dust of the ground, and God breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. And so our bodies will return to the earth where from which it came. You're just dirt. You and I were just made up of dirt, and dust thou art, unto dust thou shalt return. And so it is appropriate then in this book of Ecclesiastes, which is a sermon about life, that the preacher brings us to think about death in this chapter. Luke chapter 12, verse 15, Jesus said this concerning the rich man who had barns. And Luke chapter 12 and verse number 15, and he said unto them, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, What shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? He said, This will I do, I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then, and we talked about this before, then, that word then, future tense, then, whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. He starts out in verse 15 saying, Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. But that's not how we think. We look at people and we esteem them based on how much stuff they got. We do. If they've got more numbers in their account than we have in our account, or if they've got more acres, or if they've got more this, or they got more that, we do value and we do place an emphasis upon the abundance of things. But Jesus said, a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth, because you can't take it with you. It's not going to go with you, no matter how much of it you had. You can't take it with you. When a rich man dies and goes to heaven, heaven does not say, oh, wow, here he comes. He's just a human being like anyone else. As a matter of fact, there are, as we read in this passage, there are probably some very average and below average people on this earth who are very rich in heaven, and they're esteemed differently than you and I would think of them here on earth. And so this is a sermon about life, but we have to talk about death in order to understand life. I don't think you really can live until you understand dying and the importance of knowing where you're going and what it's all about. The Lord desires for us to think about our day of departure and what we are going to do with Him while we live. What are we going to do before we go? And so the box says, we do not know when death is coming, but it is coming. And there isn't anybody in here that's going to escape it. So, the potential of the present. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 1 and 2. Remember now thy Creator, capital C, in the days of thy youth. Folks, we're living in a country that does not remember their Creator. And our young people, unfortunately, are programmed through a government system in which the Creator is not emphasized, where science is taught that evolution made everything happen. And so there is no Creator memory going on. We desperately try on Sunday morning and Wednesday night to encourage the young people in here to think of the Creator and to remember Him. And the Bible tells us here, when should we remember our Creator? Should we remember our Creator on our deathbed? That's not the emphasis here. Now, of course, when you are dying, hopefully you do know the Creator. But you would be well off to know Him from the days of your youth, well, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them, while the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain. Remembering your Creator now. We see that some things can be done now and only now. Many in this room, you know what it means to be kind of past tense. There's some that can't even get here for this class because some things are past tense in their life. Their health is not what it used to be. While there is light and life, we are to do what God desires for us to do now. This is the potential of the present. Do not plan on serving God later. Serve Him now. If you're not going to serve Him now, my guess is it will never happen, because every day is now and every new day is now. And if you're in the habit of not doing it now, it will never happen. Obviously, you need to trust Christ now, not later. I'll put it off. I'll do it later. Mañana, mañana. Live for Him now. Know Him now. Read the Word now. Pray now. Be faithful now. Build your family home life now. Don't plan to do it later. Do it now. Don't give later. Give it now. Certainly nothing wrong with leaving a will or leaving an inheritance to the God's work and ministry later. But don't just say, I'm going to do that. That's my gift. How about now? What do you do now? My guess is the people who are doing it now are the people who will continue to do it. So, remember thou thy Creator in present tense. doing it now. People miss the golden moment of God gives them to live. The Bible says in Matthew chapter 6, and here's another passage that we got to go to. It's a great passage to look at. Matthew chapter number 6. Matthew 6 and 34. Take therefore no thought for the morrow, for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. If you're like me, there'll come a point where you say, oh, I better not do that now, because I might not have enough for later. And yet, that's the faith life that we're to live, and to walk by faith. So we have to realize that some things need to be done now, and we take thought for tomorrow when we shouldn't take thought for tomorrow. I don't think it's unwise to plan ahead. But sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Do not waste your todays worrying about your tomorrows. What a great thought. What a great phrase that is. Bob, there's some folks that stepped in here. Could you go out and maybe help them? Do not waste your todays worrying about tomorrows. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't plan ahead, and you should be unwise, or you should gamble. But rather, sufficient unto the day. When God gave manna to the people in the wilderness, he gave it to them one day at a time. One day at a time. Daily bread. Give us, what is it the prayer that we're supposed to pray? Give us this day. It doesn't even say a week. Could you pad me for a week? Give us this day our daily bread. And the reason for that is the dependency upon him. Last week, I think it was, we were talking about the shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. You know, that dependency, the sheep have to have a daily, the sheep, there is no such thing as a sheep towing a wagon behind him. You know, the shepherd might have a wagon, but the sheep didn't tow a wagon full of food. No, the sheep every day had to depend on that shepherd to find him a new batch of food, a new meadow to feed from. That daily sufficiency, that daily bread, and give us this day our daily bread. And so sometimes we waste what we could be doing today trying to plan ahead for tomorrow. And there were people back in the Old Testament that even though Moses told them, only gather the manna for today, they would try to gather it ahead, didn't they? They would try to hoard. Hey, I'll just gather double today and I can take a little time off tomorrow. And what did it do? The manna stunk. It got worms and it rotted, because that's not how God wanted us to do it. He wanted us to have daily bread, daily sufficiency on him, and just live one day, as the song says, one day at a time. There is potential in the present to enjoy life and live for the Lord. And we need to recognize that sometimes we worry ourselves all the way to death by not just living one day at a time, trusting in the Lord for that day, and living in the present and recognizing what God has me to do today, what he has me to do tomorrow, what he has, but one day at a time. Because here's the reality. Death and disease are coming. I don't care if you are super, super healthy. Death and disease are coming. They're coming, okay? Not trying to depress you, but it's just going to happen. With the help of God, learn to enjoy your life one day at a time. Just take the day as it comes and understand what God would have us to do today, and to recognize where God wants us to be each day of our life. And so remembering thy Creator in the days of thy youth, because there's somebody out there that knows how much potential you have, and he's trying for you and I to just be distracted and to not use that potential. It's so frustrating to watch young people and all the potential they have being wasted. It's frustrating for me to watch parents not help the young people with that potential to be something they could be, and instead to be something they shouldn't be. There's so much potential that gets wasted, and it's part of our treasure that God's given us, potential, and what we do with it. Now, going back to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse number 3 through 5. In the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look out of the windows be darkened, and the doors shall be shut in the streets, when the sound of the grinding is low, and he shall rise up at the voice of the bird, And all the daughters of the music shall be brought low, also when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fear shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets. What in the world is all that? Well, let's dissect it one at a time. The passing of our years. We have a present, and one day we have a future. Nowhere in literature will you find an allegory on aging quite like this chapter has in it. The keepers of the house. What are the keepers of the house? Verse 3. The keepers of the house are your strong hands, your strong arms. There are men in here that your hands, your arms were so powerful and so strong, I wouldn't want to arm wrestle you. But as you get older, they start to tremble. You can't hold them still. You can't hold them steady. I smack this hand really good, this right hand. Your right hand's kind of important, especially if you're right-handed. It's still pretty weak. But you know, after a while, the keepers of your house, the guards of your house, pretty soon they start to tremble and they shake. Okay? That's what that's talking about there. It's using an allegory. The keepers of the house shall tremble. And the strong men shall bow themselves. What is that? The strong men speaks of our legs and the weakening of old age. You know, after a while, your legs get weak. Used to be, you had strong legs. There's some here, I'm sure there's some men in here, especially your legs were super strong. I remember when I was a young person, I thought, man, my legs are really strong. I doubt my legs are as strong as they were 20 years ago or 25 years ago. I really doubt it. The strong men, all right, they start to bow themselves. They can't, they don't have the strength they used to have. Now this is for me this was the real clue. This helped me to start to understand what it was about in verse 3. And the grinders cease because they are few. Now what is that? All right? Some of us have lost all of our grinders. All right? And some of us, we only got half of our grinders. And some of us, we had to go ask somebody to make us some pretend grinders. And that's our teeth. The grinders, they cease because they are few, and it's getting harder to grind our food. And so here we see, again, an allegory concerning our health. And the grinders cease because they are few. And those that look out of the windows be darkened. Well, what's that talking about? I think now we're starting to track. Okay, it's our eyes. Our eyes begin to get dim. I don't even notice, I don't even realize it. But all of a sudden I realize I've got my face like this in my Bible, and I'm like a foot away, you know, and I get out here and whoa, and what's wrong? And I go and I check the light bulb, make sure it's working right, you know, what's wrong? The windows are getting dark. And as we get older, our eyes begin to darken and we can't see well. And then verse 4, and the doors shall be shut in the streets when the sound of the grinding is low. The doors shut. This is referring to the loss of hearing that comes when we get old. And hearing loss just is part of it. I know I'm already somewhat deaf myself. I don't hear as well as I used to. I probably always had a little bit of a hearing issue. And so I probably talk a lot as a result of it. But hearing, and they're shut. They're dim. I remember one time thinking that I was really going deaf, but it was just my phone was turned down and I couldn't hear because of that. But no, it's serious. Pretty soon your hearing starts to fail. I heard of a guy who thought he was losing his hearing and thought his wife was losing her hearing. And so he set up a test, and he got behind her in the living room while she was reading, and he stood about 20 feet away and he said, "Martha, can you hear me?" She didn't say nothing. He thought, "Oh, I know it. She's losing her hearing." He got real close, about 10 feet away. "Martha, can you hear me?" She still didn't say anything. He got right behind her head. "Martha, can you hear me now?" And she said, "George, for the third time, what do you want?" We're losing our hearing. We can't hear like we used to. And the doors are shut. Now, here's the crazy part about it. Here's the crazy part about it. "And he shall rise up at the voice of the bird." You can't hear very well, but how many of you wake up at the simplest sound early in the morning? A bird chirps and you wake up. You know? The rising up at the voice of the bird, often an indicator of old age, is not being able to sleep well. And you end up waking up a lot earlier. This is a couple thousand, this is about 3,000 years old, this passage here. And it's not been any different than for those people than it is for us today. We need to just take heart and realize that Solomon, who wrote Ecclesiastes, he was a rich, wealthy man, and yet he dealt with the same things that you and I are going to deal with. And so, rising up the voice of the bird. And then verse 5, when they shall be afraid of that which is high, fear of heights. You know, when I was younger, I remember thinking, I can jump out of my second story bedroom window, land on the sand, I'll be fine. And I would jump off of high places before. I remember when I was in second grade and we started talking about jumping off the deck, and my mom said, no, that's not a good idea. My dad said, oh, I could do it. My mom said, no, you can't. You'll hurt yourself. And I was in second grade. My dad's, he got up on the rail. He jumped off. Oh, and he's laying on the ground for a while. Oh, and she's laughing. I'm laughing. And he forgot he wasn't in high school anymore. And pretty soon we start getting real afraid of heights. Because it used to be when we fall, we just bounce around like rubber balls. Now we fall and we break. And so we're scared of heights. Older folks do not enjoy being at great heights, not like young people do. And verse 5, and the fears shall be in the way. fear of the way itself, just fear of traveling, fear of the way, fear of what's on the road. Miss Wilma's pretty funny as a mother even, but as a grandmother, I'm sure she'll even be more like this. But whenever any of us are leaving the house, especially the kids, she'll give them instructions. Now make sure you pay attention to the speed limit. Make sure you got your seatbelt fastened. Make sure you stop at the stop sign. Make sure. Why? Because they're more afraid of the way, of whatever's out there. Now, kids aren't afraid of the way. Kids aren't worried about what they're going to do or how far it's going to take them or what might happen. But we adults, as we get older, we start to fear the way. We start to fear the path and fear, well, now make sure you call when you get home. Make sure you let me know you made it safe and all that sort of thing. And so it's just part of getting older. And then in verse 5, and the almond tree shall flourish. What in the world? Well, the almond tree has a beautiful silver color in its fruit bearing. And of course, that pictures the silver gray graying of the hair. The almond tree shall flourish. I wish I could say that. Mine's just falling out. It's not flourishing. But anyhow, that's just another analogy, another allegory that we see here. And then also at the end of that verse, and the mourners go about the streets, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets. You know, back in old times, they would hire mourners. They would hire people and prepare people to walk behind the casket mourning. Even in Jesus' day, there were mourners. The mourners would cry in the streets when someone was about to die, and they would start to mourn, and they would mourn for them after they passed. And we need to see the passing of our years in order to make our years count for God. In this same passage, I can't remember if it's chapter 7 or chapter 10, but somewhere in Ecclesiastes it says it's better to go to the house of mourning than the house of feasting. It's better to go to a funeral than a party. Because a funeral is a time for you to reflect and think about life and time. And you heard me say it maybe even just last week, that here in Custer County I observed something that's probably not normal for every county in America. And that is, there is a lot of retired folk who like to live in Custer. I don't blame them. Nice place to live. But what I observe over the years is watching folks come buy their dream house or finally do what they want. But they can't hang on to it. It can't stay that way forever, because time keeps moving and it moves forward, and we don't stay the same health as we were at one time, and things change. I'm thinking of a person right now that they bought a beautiful home. I think there's three levels in the home, and it's tucked away in a beautiful rock outcropping with beautiful view and land and whatnot. But it wasn't much longer after they purchased the home that they did not ever go upstairs. And before long, they couldn't go downstairs. And they would hire someone to clean the home and to take care of the home. And they would even ask that person to go downstairs and get such and such for them. And why? Because even if you own it, doesn't mean you can use it. And I'm not trying to pick on anybody or make you feel depressed when I say that, but that's just the fact. And so as a younger person, I see these things. I remember years ago, when before I had $2 in my pocket for anything. Now I got three. But anyhow, before I had any money at all, I remember seeing someone. I observed them. They built a home, and they built a two-story home, and their bedroom was in the upstairs. And the problem was is they became very unhealthy. They were overweight, and they were unhealthy. And it wasn't long before they just struggled to get to their bedroom, all right? And I saw that, and I thought, boy, I think if I ever build a two-story house, I want to make it a daylight basement. Y'all know what a daylight basement is. You can drive around one side and enter from underneath, or you can drive around to the second level and enter from that level as well. And so I thought that would be a more wise, just observing what I saw someone else do. We have a neighbor that way. They have spent so much money on a house that was poorly designed, and they now have an elevator in the house. It's pretty silly, but they have an elevator in the house and all this sort of thing. But the point is that I see these things, and I watch people who they cannot hang on to the one. They've got possessions, but the one thing they cannot hang on to, the one thing they cannot pause, is the aging process. And the time, it just keeps ticking away. And so what I've also observed is that some of these people were Christians. And some of these people were Christians who could afford things, but instead they do this. As this plate goes by, they drop in not only just an offering and a tithe, but they drop in the equivalent of probably a car payment. The equivalent of maybe two car payments. For missions. For missions. For ministries around the world. I heard this recently and I thought, wow, what an interesting concept concerning the way we give and the way we do things. But you have person A. Person A, they afford themselves nicer things, and more power to you. But they afford themselves a brand new car, and they drive that brand new car. Person B affords themselves a car that is in decent shape, but it is not necessarily a brand new car. The difference usually is between B and A is something called payments. That evil word called payments, right? And I'm not saying payments are wrong, but sometimes what happens is that we afford ourselves and we budget ourselves for payments, and we get into payment. I remember, again, years ago when I didn't even have 50 cents in my pocket, I remember me meeting a guy named Bob, and Bob told us something I never heard of it before. My parents didn't live this way, and it was interesting, but Bob was, he moved from Minnesota out to Wyoming and living by himself. Actually, it was kind of a sad life, but anyway, every year he would trade in his vehicle for a new one. In other words, if he had the, and this was like back in the 90s, so if he had a 1996, then he drove the 97, and then he traded that one in for the 98, and so whoever bought his truck had just, you know, maybe 20,000 miles on it or something like that, and that's just what he did. Hey, it's free country, it's America, you can do whatever you want. However, here's what I know, because I've observed it long enough to realize, you drive in style that way. You stay in the latest and the greatest, and you drive in luxurious style. However, you constantly have that monthly payment. However, over here, person B, they drive something without payments, but in good shape, and they maintain it, and they take care of it, and the maintenance that they do on it is much less than the actual payments over here, and the resale value is still better because they didn't pay so much for it to begin with. But anyhow, what they're able to do is afford for other things, afford for things that really matter. Afford for things that are eternal. And I've seen Christians who who drive less, who live less, who afford less for themselves, but they they do more for the Lord. They pass it on. They lay up treasure in heaven instead of on the earth. And at the end of your life, even if both type A and type B are Christian, at the end of their lives, one will have invested in heaven, and one will have driven luxury but died without it. Even the last car they buy, they'll leave it behind. You know this, and there's nobody in here, I think, like this, but you know that here in Custer, there's some folks with a lot of spending money. And I'm just shocked and horrified at the way they blow it. And of course, I'd love to say to them, hey, you know what you could be doing with that? And I'm not talking about me or even this church, but there are ministries and there are places around the world that could be invested in. And I think of one individual who can't figure out what to do with themselves, can't figure out what to do with their possessions, and that just is waste. Now, it's free country. It's America. It's free country. You can do what you want. However, as a young person who is a Christian, I look at that and I say to myself, I don't want to be like that. I had unsaved grandparents who were frugal, and they were unsaved. They drove a Cadillac, but they had a cooler in the back seat with bologna and cheese and bread and mayonnaise, and they would make themselves lunch on their trip. Now, that was somebody who wasn't even a Christian, but they were frugal with their money. But you and I, our motivation for frugalness should be, we can lay up treasure in heaven. We can do more with it for the Lord, for eternal purposes, versus just the present. And I think some of us treat God this way. I saw something, I don't know, I was on Facebook. You know how it just passes by you. It was something like this. It was like a rhetorical question. Why is it that you treat that person better because they gave you $100 than you do me, who only gave you $10? When the truth is, they had $1,000 in their pocket, and all I had in my pocket was $10. Sometimes our giving and our receiving is very skewed, but that reminded me of a passage where Jesus sat by and watched people giving in the offering box. And his disciples were impressed with these guys that were pouring in into the treasure box. And yet he said, you see that widow lady there? He said, I'm more impressed with her. She gave all. That's all she, that those two mites that she put in, that's all she had. God sees our giving and our investing differently than people do. Some people take care of themselves, but they're not rich toward God, as he said in that passage. But the Bible tells us to lay up our treasure in heaven, because we're not going to keep it. I don't care how powerful or wealthy or whatever you seem to possess right now, you're not going to hang on to it. But if you'll send it on ahead, and if you'll invest in eternity, it will be something that will last forever. And so the preparation for eternity, chapter 12 again of Ecclesiastes in verse 6, or ever the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. Fanny Crosby wrote a song, someday the silver cord will break, and that means I'm going to die someday. The cord's going to break, the golden bowl's going to collapse, the pitcher's going to be broken. There's coming a day... I don't know if Solomon, being a rich guy, was looking at some ornament that was held by silver cords, and maybe there was a golden bowl and a pitcher, and maybe one of the cords broke and it just all collapsed and smashed, and maybe it made him think about how that our life is like that silver cord. One day it's going to loosen. It's going to come collapse, and we're going to go meet God, and we're going to be there for eternity. We need to prepare for eternity. First of all, you got to know that you're saved. You got to know Jesus Christ as your personal Savior. Not just about him in your head, but you have to truly know him as Lord and Savior. And secondly, you've got to yield your life to him completely. giving yourself over to Christ, allowing Him to control and rule and reign. Last week, a week ago last, or 10 days ago or whatever, we bought a car and sold a car. And we talked about how that our children are moving on, and we're really not going to be taking family trips anymore in the car that we had. And because that car is depreciating in value, it'd be good to just sell it and to get out from that. We it was paid for, but to might as well sell it while it's still got some value and get something else. And I want to appreciate my wife here, especially since she's not in the room. I'll just brag about her for a minute. But that car that we had was the nicest car we ever had. It was a fun time when we bought it. It was not new, but it was used, slightly used, and we bought it. It had all the bells and whistles on it. We weren't even looking for it. But the one we were looking at on the internet sold before we got to the lot, and the one they had there was a step up with all the bells and whistles, leather seats and everything, you know, heated seats and a DVD player and all this stuff, you know, fancy stuff, stuff I never even used. And so we were able to sell it, and I told my wife, I said, now, we could get one of these at the same used car lot, and it's a 2018, and the payments would be da-da-da-da-da-da. And I said, but then there's this guy, he's selling this one, it's a 2006, and it's got this many miles, but he's selling it, and he's looks like he's taking really good care of it. And my wife's like, well, you know what, I like the idea of not having payments. I like the idea of not having that debt and be saddled with it. I like the idea of being able to, if the church needed to cut our salary back, that we would not have to be hurting that way, and that we would be okay. I like that. And she said, I would much rather. And so we went from a 2011 car to a 2006 car. And I don't care if the car lasts 5 years or 5 months. I'm just thankful for a wife who has that attitude, who desires to live below instead of above. But so many of us, we get to that status level and we think we got to stay there. And I don't know if it becomes, well, I know this for a fact. I know that some people, they couldn't possibly drive something old because they're so worried about what they look like. You know people like that. And how silly that is. I know some people that drive really nice cars and live in a house that isn't worth as much as the car. Except the car is going to depreciate. You know that. But what are you doing for eternity? What are you doing for eternal reward, eternal investment, laying up treasure in heaven? I mentioned about a will. Brother Bill was a recipient of a man who left a will to be distributed among God's people, and he gave a lady in charge and said, you just pray and ask God to show you who to give it to. And so she would just watch and keep her ears and eyes open. And the Bill Smith family came through their church one time, and God pressed upon her heart, this family could use some help. And so she wasn't the owner, but she was the manager of this estate, and she was paying, I think, $500 a month towards Brother Bill to get his first truck and trailer that they drove around. And what a blessing. Now, Brother Bill never met that man. That man was in heaven. But one day, that man and Brother Bill will meet. What a neat meeting. What a neat time of conversation, of the investment in the Bill Smith family by laying up treasure in heaven. The greatest thing we can do is give our lives to God now. Give God now. Realize the potential of the present. Realize it. Recognize, and everybody in here, no matter your age, no matter how feeble you feel, you have potential right now. You have ability and you have opportunity right now. Realize your present potential and recognize that you're passing quickly. You're not going to stay how you are now, and prepare for eternity by giving your life to God. That's what we need to learn from this lesson today is it's coming. And our departure day is coming. And when we leave, we want to leave everything decently and in order. We don't want to leave things undone or out of order. We want to make good preparation for the time to come. And here's what I want to say. I want to say when I leave that nothing was left wasted. but it was all left to be used in the future, or it was all used up in the present for the right things. Do not waste another day, because the day of our departure is coming, and it's coming sooner than we can imagine. We don't know if 2020 will be a complete year for everybody in this room. We don't know that. But remember, you are going to depart one day. Are you ready?